round alone, we have 10 finishers. And out of the 10 finishers, there's only two of them that work for the same company. So we don't have that option of taking light rail or carpooling together. We have to take several vehicles to different jobs. Sometimes they can't work together. They're on different jobs alone. The only time that we have the option to use the bus system is if we're on one of these downtown projects. We're there for any length of time where you can leave your tools there and you can actually use that. And so we obviously need the new bridge, light rail. It's something that, you know, not just for the workers out here, but it's for my daughter who's just learning how to drive. She drove over here on a Saturday, and it took us from Battleground to get over to Delta Park. Took us an hour and a half, and that was without a bridge lift. I mean, so I think, you know, we need to do something, and for myself and for the members of Local 555, we'd like to replace the bridge with light rail and also with a bike. If we could get a bike in there, that would be really nice. Thank you.
Mayor Park, Commissioners, my name is Jim Howe, 3325 Northeast 45th. The bridge across the Columbia River is structurally and functionally obsolete and probably should be replaced. Its opening span causes major traffic delays and has been identified by tugboat operators as a serious navigational hazard. In addition, it is corroded and is coated with peeling lead paint. Built on timber piling, it would probably not survive a major earthquake. It seriously lacks the capacity to meet future demand, and even today, major traffic delays occur in the bridge influence area. This bridge is a critical link in the I-5 corridor between Mexico and Canada. It is a link, if this link were to be broken for any extended period of time, commerce would be severely impacted along the entire West Coast. The impact would be felt especially in the Portland metropolitan area. If you think I am referring to the I-5 interstate bridge, you would be mistaken. I am talking about the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad Bridge, located about 1 mile downstream. Rising gas prices, increased dependency on foreign oil, and global climate change will require railroads to expand to meet future demands. They provide the most cost-effective and energy-efficient way to transport freight and people. Furthermore, they can be run on electricity instead of oil. In the near future, railroads will be called upon to provide much more of the nation's freight and passenger service. Replacing the two-track railroad bridge built in Teddy Roosevelt's administration should be one of the region's top priorities. A new four-track bridge and major improvements to Vancouver and Portland junctions, including some passenger train bypass track, is desperately needed. And incidentally, by fixing the railroad bridge, you basically eliminate just about all the lifts on the interstate bridge. Commuter service is something that could be added to this. It looks like I got 16 seconds left. So you have it written in front of you, but basically commuter service between Portland and Vancouver running every 20 minutes. It's about a 12-minute trip. You'd have about 6,000 people capacity, about the same as I-5. And I supplement to the DEIS is needed. The freeway and light rail have been extensively studied, but until heavy rail has been given the same level of analysis, this multi-billion-dollar project should not move forward. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much.
Just for those testifying after this, you don't have to give your home address anymore, so just your name will suffice.
Next three are Lynn Lehrbach, Paya Welch, and Jeff Swanson. They'll be followed by Catherine Williams, Mike Houck, and Chris Smith.
Please state your name when you testify. You each have 2 minutes, and anyone can begin.
I'm Lynn Lehrbach, representing Joint Council of Teamsters, who have approximately 20,000 members in the metro area, including Vancouver. And I'm here to urge you to vote for this resolution. 3 years of hard work have gone into this by a lot of people. And the feds are on board. Both states are on board. Where are we going to do this, and how long is it going to take in the future to ever get back to this point again? Congressman Oberstar, who is a ranking chair on transportation and chairs it and will next year in the next administration, to your point, Commissioner Adams, visiting out here, went across that bridge and was appalled that it had a drawbridge on it. So to your point, Sam, you're right. It shouldn't have a drawbridge on it. It impedes the movement of commerce. I'd like to give credit to Tom Markroff, who's worked very, very hard to keep both states on track on this thing, and to Congressman Blumenauer and DeFazio. Again, if we don't do it now, when will we do it, and what will be the cost in the future? All raw products are being oil, steel, lumber, cement. It's being taken off the market by the emerging third world countries, and the price will continue to rise. It'll cost 10 times as much if we wait, because we won't be back to this for 10 years if we don't do it now. It's important to note, too, that the movement of freight is very important not only to our community and economically to the community. It has to be moved smoothly, and we use the goods. Every one of us here and every one of our citizens get their goods through the movement of trucks, whether it be food or dry goods. So we get to do it efficiently and effectively, or the employers that do it will move on us. I'd like to just finish with this. On congestion pricing, I agree with tolling, but when the bridge is built and not before. And to you, Dan, to you, we already use transponders. We weigh trucks and charge things. So transponders are in effect in the state, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. My name is Pia Welch, and I'm here representing the Portland Air Cargo Association. Our membership includes air cargo carriers, airlines, trucking companies, brokers, forwarders, and many other freight-related businesses. Air cargo connects PDX to the world and the world to PDX. Air cargo is a vital link in our global economy. Many items we use in our daily lives come to us via air cargo. For the calendar year 2007, over 274,000 tons of air freight moved through PDX, representing significant economic value. Our members are part of the wholesale trade and freight transportation sectors of the economy that employ 93,000 people in the Portland-Vancouver metro area. A smooth transportation flow is important to our economy. Last December, with the flood in Chehalis, Washington, we had a glimpse of what happens when nothing can move across the I-5 corridor. In order to maintain our economic competitiveness and our quality of life, we need a transportation network that moves product reliably, safely, and on time. The Columbia River Crossing is an essential part of our regional distribution system. We support recommendations for a replacement bridge at the Columbia River Crossing because it uses the existing transportation corridor, and it is a multimodal system and will help move people out of cars. The recommended bridge is a good step towards improving safety and reliability for the air cargo pickups and deliveries that are very crucial to our economy. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Mayor and members of the Commission, my name is Jeff Swanson. I'm the logistics manager for Schnitzer Steel Industries' West Coast metals recycling and steel manufacturing businesses. We support construction of a new bridge with light rail. On a monthly basis, our organization ships approximately 25,000 tons of metal scrap and finished steel goods across the Columbia River, primarily the I-5 span, in either the northbound or southbound direction. This translates to roughly 900 truckloads per month or 45 truckloads per business day. With these kinds of volumes, time matters. Delay, such as is caused by congestion, accidents, and bridge lifts, has a direct, tangible impact to our bottom line and economic viability. As a company, we utilize the transportation resources of multiple freight carriers encompassing a variety of freight modes, highway, rail, and marine. We also possess our own fleet of trucks, rail cars, and barges. When delay and inconsistent transit times affect productivity, freight rates must increase so that revenue earned will continue to cover costs. Rapidly rising energy prices exacerbate this problem. Current hourly costs of operation for trucks is in the $120 to $140 per hour range and rises with every increase in fuel cost. To put this figure in perspective, on a per minute basis, the cost of operating a truck is $2 to $2.33. These costs are incurred whether the freight is moving at 55 miles an hour down the highway or parked on the interstate bridge for 30 minutes. In this context, consider the rate of return on a $10 bridge toll. A conservative estimate is that it would pay for itself if only 5 minutes were saved. Congestion represents a tangible economic cost to our community, one that we pay for every time we purchase a good or service, every time we sit in traffic, and every time we see the results of congestion on our natural environment. In conclusion, this project is long overdue and needs to swiftly move towards fulfillment. While it will not solve all of the region's transportation problems, it represents a visionary leap forward in doing so and shows the kind of leadership our region requires to maintain and improve upon the present standard of living. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Next three are Catherine Williams, Mike Houck, and Chris Smith. Thank you. They'll be followed by Terry Parker, Bill Scott, and Jill Fuglister.
Mayor Potter, members of council, my name is Catherine Williams. I'm the Business and Rail Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. The convergence of surface transportation port facilities in Portland and Vancouver make the I-5 corridor between I-84 and I-205 the crossroads for freight flows by all modes through and around the region. We believe the Columbia River Crossing Project is a smart transportation and quality of life decision that will benefit both sides of the river as our region grows. The port supports a replacement bridge with light rail transit and improvements to the 7 interchanges within the study area. We support the use of tolls to finance the project and manage traffic demand. The CRC will provide safer travel, more commuter choice, better freight mobility, and an opportunity to create a sustainable visual signature that models the environmental and community ethics of our region. The Marine Drive Interchange is the most critical freight interchange within the state of Oregon. It provides direct access from the interstate to the state's only intermodal container terminal, Terminal 6, and the Freight Logistics Center and Rivergate. It provides critical access for companies like Columbia Sportswear, Rada Paint, Nordstrom, Portland French Bakery, and many others. The redesign of this interchange must ensure that freight mobility is the design priority, and I've shared a letter from our executive director with all of you with some additional details on that, and I encourage you to look at that. Just very quickly, we believe this project addresses quality of life issues that we all care about, and ultimately it's about people, families who need to get to where they need to go and have choices how they get there. Thank you for your hard work and careful attention to this project. We look forward to working with the city and other partners to move this project forward.
Mayor Potter, commissioners, my name is Mike Houck. I serve on the boards of directors for 1,000 Friends of Oregon and the Coalition for a Livable Future, and I'm a member of the Sustainable Development Commission as well. All three of these groups have given you a host of reasons for rejecting the current preferred alternative and have offered you very specific recommendations for creating what we call a climate smart alternative. Having participated in numerous, and I would say intense, very complex conversations with all of these groups, I can attest to the fact that, and you've heard very well thought out testimony earlier, and you will hear some more to follow, that the recommendations that you've been receiving are far from knee-jerk recommendations that the Oregonian referred to, I think, yesterday or day before. These are very well-reasoned alternatives, in my opinion. I'm struck with the similarities of this issue, between the similarities between this issue and one that Portland City Council considered over 30 years ago, the Mount Hood Freeway. As with that decision to reject a freeway in exchange for building Max Light Rail and other alternative transit projects, I believe the CRC decision represents an opportunity for you to move the region to an alternative that responds to a carbon-constrained future. Your decision is potentially a symbolic and precedent-setting as their decision to embrace a more ecologically, socially, and economically responsible alternative. There are two specific points I would like to raise in my remaining few moments. One is the postcard nature of this bridge, the potential for excellence in design. I cannot believe, and I'm pleased that the Portland Planning Commission raised this issue, that the Pearson Airfield, I think, is the tail wagging the dog in this process, and I'm hopeful we can somehow resolve a situation where you have 35 or 40 planes taking off that affects the entire design of this bridge. And the last point I'll make, having sat for 2 years on the Columbia Slough Watershed Council, working to find a site that would provide mitigation for wetlands lost at PDX. We came up with Vanport Wetlands. It's a fabulously restored wetlands. A huge portion of that wetland is likely to be impacted by the current design, and that is a significant concern of mine, having, again, spent so much time and energy coming up with an alternative out there that really replaced a lot of the wetland losses we've seen in the Columbia Corridor. Thank you.
Mayor Potter, members of council, I'm Chris Smith, and I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about the finances today. Councilor Liberty showed you the finance plan from the DEIS. It could literally be written on the back of a napkin. It would fit on the back of a napkin, and I have about as much confidence in it as I would have on one written on the back of a napkin. But as Councilor Liberty pointed out, it contemplates $700 million in Oregon state sources. I'd like to give you some other numbers. $231 million in maintenance backlog on Portland streets, which includes $65 million on the 157 bridges that the city of Portland owns, $300 million to replace the Selwood Bridge, $325 million of maintenance backlog on the Willamette River bridges owned by Multnomah County. What all these numbers have in common? They will compete for motor vehicle taxes of some kind in this state. Commissioner Leonard has been in the legislature. I think he knows that the political will to increase motor vehicle taxes is a finite quantity. And if we are looking to Salem for $700 million for this bridge, there is no question in my mind that those other critical needs will be impacted. This will not simply be purely incremental money from the state. It will come as an opportunity cost against other needs that are very important to this city and this region, and to think otherwise is simply naive. I would also like to point out that significant portions of the funding for this bridge will be borrowed. Whatever motor vehicle tax option Salem comes up with will be bonded over a long number of years to provide the revenue to build this bridge, and the toll revenue will be bonded. Both of those depend on people driving. If, as many of us believe, rising energy prices will radically decrease the amount of driving that people in this state do, then the revenue to repay those bonds is at risk, and there is the risk that we will need to take other transportation revenues not contemplated in this and use those to repay those bonds. This is very financially risky, and I urge you to vote to request a supplemental DIS to examine more cost-effective options for this crossing. Thank you.
The next three are Terry Parker, Bill Scott, and Jill Fuglister. They'll be followed by Mara Gross, Emily Hicks, and Mel Rader.
Good evening, good afternoon. My name is Terry Parker. Last month, I delivered a copy of my testimony on the draft DIS for this project that offers a savings for taxpayers. I won't go over that. Hopefully, you've read it. One further note to that, demolishing the existing bridges carries approximately the same price tag as it would to upgrade them. Sustainability starts with financial self-sustainability. Singling out motorists only for tolling, as the council has proposed, is socialistic profiling based on the vehicle of transport, therefore discriminatory, and taints the credibility of any discussion this council can have in the future on discrimination issues. With the skyrocketing costs of motor fuels, no outdated dictatorial and subsidized incentives are needed to promote alternative forms of transit. A real bridge in a reality check world necessitates an equitable cost-sharing plan, which must be a condition that hopefully Clark County will mandate. If tolling is implemented for any kind of motor vehicles, then the users of all modes of vehicle traffic must be required to pay a toll or a user charge. At a cost per passenger, per crossing, for max, at $9 a crossing, transit passengers need to be obligated to pay a proportionate share of the local transit infrastructure costs with a surcharge on transit fares. And instead of just providing lip service and freeloading, bicyclists too must be expected to pay their own way with a bridge toll to cover any match monies on the bicycle. And that the bicycle hasn't even been decided how much it costs. As for the eco-critics that suggest the number of lanes on an expanded motor vehicle crossing will lead to sprawl, hey, it's population growth. That's the key, and that's what this council should be discussing. I'm sort of running out of time here, and I can't legislate from a bubble with a one-sided agenda that attempts to dictate lifestyle, housing, and mode and transportation choices. Talk about reducing population growth and stabilizing it. Thank you.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, I'm Bill Scott, general manager of Zipcar. Sorry, I chaired the city's peak oil task force last year and was previously director of the State of Oregon Department of Economic and Community Development for 9 years. I've advocated for many, many highway transportation infrastructure projects over the years. I'm here to advocate that you take a step forward toward solving the Columbia Crossing project by rejecting this resolution and taking action that does not endorse a locally preferred alternative at this time, since I don't believe you have a viable project in front of you. The Oregonian referred to opponents of the proposed 12-lane bridge as knee-jerk. I actually started as a knee-jerk supporter. There's obviously a major problem to be solved. Lots of smart people were working on it, and I was inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt. Unfortunately, the more I learned about the size of the structure, the lack of any conceivable source of financing for a project this size, and the lame results it's projected to achieve, the more I realized that we need to take a stand against it, regardless of the desirability of regional unanimity and building your partnership with the state. I'm convinced that this bridge won't be built in this format because it's not affordable and it will never meet the conditions that you're attempting, you and others are attempting to place on your support for it. It isn't needed to solve the problems with the crossing, and it won't solve them if it is built. It's time to pull the plug. Zipcar's business won't be affected by whether this project goes forward, but it does give me a window on the choices that thousands of Portlanders are making to live a different kind of a life that's less and diminishes the role of the automobile in their lives. Those choices are consistent with the goals that you've stated and the state of Oregon has stated. I think the real opportunity cost here is that there's a once-in-a-generation chance to take advantage of the new administration in Washington and go forward with a really visionary Portland kind of project, and I hope you do that instead of dragging a 12-lane freeway in there. Thank you.
Mayor, members of the council, thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is Jill Fuglister, and I'm a co-director of the Coalition for a Livable Future. We're asking you to reject the resolution before you today. We think today is a unique opportunity for you as a council to demonstrate that far-sighted, sustainability-focused brand of leadership that Portland is known for. We view the Columbia River Crossing project as a pivotal, precedent-setting project. It comes at a time when we must transform how we do things as we grapple with the looming threat of global warming and rising gas prices. An investment of this magnitude must take a big bite out of our carbon footprint, so that even as regional population grows, the total amount we drive doesn't. Yet the alternative you're considering supporting today falls far short. The resolution under consideration acknowledges that critical information for making a sound decision is missing and that the 12-lane alternative in the DEIS is based upon flawed data. Yet your resolution will support this flawed alternative should you approve it. And the more steps forward taken toward the 12-lane bridge proposal, the harder it will become to shift direction. In the 3 years that CLF has served on the CRC task force, our concerns, many of which are listed in the resolution or in the exhibit, have not been addressed. What should we expect looking ahead? And at what point will the city have a vote on the issues that are identified in that resolution and that Mr. Garrett just verbally assured you ODOT wouldn't override? It's unclear and should be clarified, those decision-making points, before moving ahead. I understand that not moving forward today would be difficult, but that's what we're asking you to do. Again, today is a unique opportunity to choose to pause and try to redirect this project now, or choose to support a 12-lane freeway bridge expansion and hope you'll be able to right-size it and redirect it later when the momentum will be harder to shift. We urge you to make the right choice and not support the resolution before you. Thank you.
The next three are Mara Gross, Emily Hicks, and Mel Rader. They'll be followed by Bob Stacy, Joe Smith, and Ben Reiger.
Mayor Potter, members of council, my name is Mara Gross. I'm the policy director at the Coalition for a Livable Future. We share the concerns that other speakers have about global warming and induced sprawl in Clark County, but due to limited time, I'm going to spend my time talking about a couple of other specific issues. We're really concerned, in addition to those things, about the impact the CRC is going to have on funding of other critical issues. Chris Smith spoke of some of these. There's the Selwood Bridge replacement, $240 to $420 million. Safe, sound, and green streets, not to mention all the needed projects. Safe, sound, and green doesn't cover. If the voters don't pass funding for that, how are we going to pay for it? We're looking at, I believe it's $800 million. Gray to Green, a program to manage our stormwater and protect our rivers and watersheds. It's about $50 million we're missing for that. Just these three examples add up to over $1 billion. I don't see how we can spend $600 million without sacrificing other needs, even if the local funding for the CRC comes from the state portion of the gas tax. Commissioner Adams' opinion piece in the Oregonian today included some excellent language that spoke to a number of our concerns. However, it also referenced connecting East and West Hayden Island. I believe he's referring to a bridge to West Hayden Island, which would cost about $100 million. It would also have a major environmental impact, as the proposals directly to tied to creation of marine terminals over one of the most critical natural areas in Portland, another one of those critical areas being Vanport Wetlands. There's also the cost of what other expansions this project is going to necessitate. Don Wagner, who spent 25 years with ODOT, is now WashDOT's regional manager, was quoted in the Columbian the other day talking about the Rose Quarter. He said that Oregon will eventually need to solve this problem, and that it, quote, will be a mega project of the same magnitude as the CRC. If you approve the LPA today, I'd like to be reassured that the city will have another vote later on. I heard that Matt Garrett is saying that won't move forward if the city votes no. Wanted to be ensured that there is that sort of vote, and I have an understanding of what the timeline is. But with all these problems and more, we're asking you to reconsider. Get updated environmental and economic data and find a better solution.
Just to clarify, I appreciate your testimony. What I talked about was the fact that the current bridge slices in half East and West Hayden Island. Okay. You're referring to a north-south issue.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Council has to approve. This does come back to council probably more than once to approve going from the two phases ahead, the final EIS, and then the record of decision.
Thank you.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Emily Hicks. I'm a recent graduate of PSU's College of Urban and Public Affairs. I have a master's in public health and the graduate sustainability certificate. And I'm here today representing the next generation of leaders who see a tremendous opportunity to implement a higher level of systems thinking and impact analysis. And there's also a tremendous opportunity, rather, we have a tremendous responsibility to live up to our reputation as innovative planners and leaders in the sustainability movement. I'm here today also to encourage you to listen to the experts here in the room and that you've heard from over the past several months and even years, and demand a clear vision of what this project looks like before moving forward. For instance, the EPA has raised concerns about contaminating Clark County's major underground drinking water aquifer. There's also concerns about permanent increases in stormwater runoff and construction-related impacts to water quality. Multnomah County's health impact assessment states that an increase in the volume of vehicles is likely to yield more severe health impacts from the air pollution and disproportionately affect low-income families and people of color. So, moving forward without all the information and without legally binding conditions doesn't seem to line up with our intentions here in Portland to start accounting more for equity and long-term impacts. There are also concerns about causing urban sprawl in Clark County. This means more people spending more time commuting in their cars. Public health research shows that the amount of time spent in cars has a direct relationship with obesity, and motor vehicle accidents are the leading cause of deaths. So shouldn't we be thinking about ways to decrease the amount of single occupancy cars rather than making way for more? I believe that there are many innovative upstream alternatives possible, and I'm wondering if we've really considered or explored all of these options in our region. This is an opportunity to really lead in a new way of doing things, a way that is fully informed, participatory, and in a way that promises to have lasting positive impacts for all of the region's residents. Thank you.
Mayor Potter, members of the commission, my name is Mel Rader. I work for Upstream Public Health. And I've come to emphasize the impact of the project will have on the health of the residents in the region, and to voice my concerns about the analysis and about the timeline for public comment. Now, I'm part of a diverse group of organizations that came together to examine the effects of the proposed projects on the health outcomes. And the Multnomah County Public Health Department led the way in this effort by writing a health impact assessment as a commentary on the draft environmental impact statement. Some of the impacts that the proposed projects have on health include air pollution, which increases rates of respiratory disease and cancer, the effect of excessive noise on cardiovascular disease and impaired mental functioning. And a lot of these effects are likely to fall disproportionately on low-income people, households that live close to the freeway. And the Portland and the region has long been a model for sustainable design, and I think we can also be a model for healthy community design. But that really requires that we assess a lot of the health impacts of these large projects and find ways to mitigate those impacts. And I'd encourage you to think about that in the process. I'd also like to say that although there are a number of things positive about a project, there are many, many major concerns I have, one of them being the impact on global warming. And this is also a big health issue as well as environmental issue. And I really encourage you to step back and take the time to assess the impacts and therefore not pass the resolution that's before today, because I don't think it's good enough and we're ready to have a conscious step forward. Thank you.
The next three are Bob Stacy, Joe Smith, and Ben Reiger. They'll be followed by Greg Johnson, Jay Kuhlman, and Per Fagerin.
Your Honor, Commissioners, my name is Bob Stacy. I'm with 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I've turned in copies of testimony and comments that 1,000 Friends provided on the draft environmental impact statement that point out that the project that would be approved by this LPA violate Oregon and Washington laws requiring reduction in greenhouse gases because of the increased capacity provided by the 12 lanes and 14 lane miles in the 12 lane version of the bridge. I don't think it's necessary to belabor that today. I take note of Commissioner Adams' comments at the beginning of the session this afternoon that were published in the Oregonian, and it's clear that the council understands the concern that we have about global warming. We think it's irreconcilable with this project, and so the only difference we have with the commissioner's statement is that we believe these concerns compel a vote not to approve the LPA, to instead request a supplemental environmental impact statement that identifies one or more alternatives that would comply with Oregon and Washington laws regarding greenhouse gases, that would meet the objections, concerns, and objectives of the City of Portland, rather than proceeding to approve an LPA that is inconsistent with those views. So we also agree with the statement attributed to Commissioner Adams in the paper this morning that people in the city are afraid of getting rolled. That is not an illegitimate concern given the legal structure under which you operate. You should be concerned that you don't really have agreement with your partners. Vancouver was unable to agree on tolling. It's not clear that Clark County is going to be able to agree to light rail. And it is clear that Washington State DOT's regional manager believes that this bridge project won't be successful until Oregon four lanes I-5 through Portland and clears up the alleged bottlenecks south of the bridge. That's what you face. We don't have a happy family here. You should send a very clear signal that dialogue begins with you saying no to this design and that you're asking for a better design. Thank you.
Bob, if I could just, I think your comments are well stated, as have been the comments, a lot of the comments that preceded you. It's not often that I sort of get accused to be on the side of the automobile and production of greenhouse gas.
Not at all.
Consumption of oil. So I have hives back here. The opportunity to change, to have sort of a transformational change in the way that we build and operate transportation systems does exist. It is possible that we could get what we're asking for. It is possible. And we've had assurances that we're not going to get rolled. Time will tell. And there are plenty of people like you and others that will be vigilant about that. I certainly will be, and hopefully I'll be around at least for another 4.5 years on this body. The guess that the hope that I have that it is possible that we can have one of those transformational moments regionally with this project is 3.5 years ago when I started out, the ambitions of some of the stakeholders was for a much larger bridge than simply replacing the three lanes we have in each direction now. And we're not approving a 12-lane bridge up here. We're saying moving forward the assumption of three lanes in each direction, which exists right now. And there was adamant opposition by leaders around the table that it would not be light rail. So in 3.5 years, I've seen stakeholders' opinions change on this, and I would not necessarily have predicted it 3.5 years ago, but it has come to pass, and this is exactly what Portland asked for 3.5 years ago. So I think your points are absolutely, excellent. And if we couldn't shut this down in the future, if we do get rolled, I wouldn't recommend moving forward with further evaluation if I didn't feel confident of that, even though our leverage in the future is political, not necessarily statutory. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to respond specifically to my glass half full based on the experience of the last 3 years versus the glass is half empty based on your experience that goes back further than mine.
Commissioner, thank you. I greatly respect the progress that you feel you've made, and I do believe that you are not on the side of greenhouse gas production.
And I love babies, too.
Yeah. All around success. The strong feeling and legal position that I have and take is that the council has a specific leverage point in the environmental impact statement review process. That leverage point is now. You exercise it by voting not to approve the locally preferred alternative presented, one that, if it is decided, I'm not gainsaying anything that Matt Garrett said today, but if it is decided by the two DOTs, could be the basis for a 12-lane bridge and 14 lane miles of expansion within the project area, because that is acknowledged as the impacts of this DEIS. And therefore, you should not send an ambiguous signal that you need to continue to talk without sending the unambiguous signal that you're serious and you refuse to accept a 12-lane bridge alternative.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amen. Joe Smith, citizen. What does one do when he sees his friends hell-bent on making a mistake? Actually, two mistakes, one already made. The first, the letter released weeks ago suggesting you've already decided to make the second mistake, to spend $4.5 billion on a mega bridge. To the first, how can we say public input has meaning when the decision makers announce they've made up their mind before the public is given a chance to comment? I've been told we shouldn't bring this up because it's too likely to make you all defensive. But you are my friends. And someone needs to say how badly that announcement reflected on the decision being made. It seemed one more example of an effort to steamroll the entire process. So those of us speaking against the mega bridge plead with you to step back and take a fresh look, because the second mistake would be to build a mega bridge. Let me be clear. We recognize the need for a new or expanded crossing for public transit and bicycles. But that need can be met for far less money and with far better effect over time than the proposed behemoth the people who think only in terms of more and bigger would foist on us. I'm providing you with my testimony to Metro last month. My major thesis, which I stress today, is that the proposed megabridge assumes and supports continued traffic growth, and most important, continued growth in private automobiles commuting across the river, when what we should be focusing on is how not just to slow that growth, but to reduce it. I offer ways we can do that both long and short term. In an age facing a future of limited petroleum and global warming, we have a chance for Portland and Oregon to once again provide leadership for the entire country. The mega bridge goes in exactly the wrong direction. Please, take a new look.
Hi, Ben Rigger, a citizen. And I grew up right off of Powell Boulevard, and I can't help but see kind of the parallel between this freeway and the Mount Hood Freeway. And I reflecting on, I kind of think that how much different my neighborhood and the region would be if we had gone through to create the Mount Hood Freeway. So I was asking the council to kind of cautiously reject the resolution to kind of nip the momentum in the bud, so to speak, before it gets out of control. I know there's a lot of money and thought and research behind the project, but I think we should really think about what the point of the interstate system is and where that fits into intra-regional travel. It's unfortunate that the river divides these very two connected cities, Vancouver and the Portland metropolitan area, and we should really think about what's causing the traffic between those two regions. Thank you.
Yeah, can I ask Bob Stacey a question? It's not often we have a Loeb fellow in front of us, so I want to take full advantage of this. Two today.
Three.
I've heard people talk in terms of an approach that's a yes but or a no but. So I've been thinking about those two options, but I'd like to ask you specifically, are you comfortable with the but that we've arrived at in this document?
Yes, Commissioner. I believe you've stated concerns that are consistent with the ones that we have. I would be a little more forceful on the global warming. I think it is a violation of what the Oregon legislature enacted last full session as the target for greenhouse gas reductions to expand highway capacity this significantly. It leads us in the wrong direction. Other than that, yes, the but so is.
If it's fair to say that the but, we have some agreement on the but, the conditions, is the gist, just so I understand it, the gist of your disagreement over whether we're going to lose the leverage points going forward, is that the fundamental question?
Yes.
Thank you.
Next three are Greg Johnson, Jay Kuhlman, and Per Fagerin. They'll be followed by Marion Haynes, Douglas Allen, and Rich Brown.
Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, my name is Greg Johnson. I'm here today representing 1,000 members of Local 516 Fabricating Iron Workers in the Portland-Vancouver area. I'm also here as a member of Columbia Pacific Building Trades. Together, we'd like to go on record in support of the Columbia River Crossing, including light rail. We contend that we're in need of a new bridge, and the price to build it will only be going up as time goes on. I seem to remember, I'm a longtime resident of the Portland area, and I seem to remember the same type of debate going on whether Portland should build a light rail system. A lot of pros and cons to that, and I don't think there's anybody in the room that's in argument about whether that was a good idea. I think the bridge sooner or later has to be built, and either build it now at $4.5 billion or in 10 years you're going to pay $10 billion. So. Thank you very much for your consideration.
My name is Jay Kuhlman. I was concerned with, I believe that building this bridge is crucial, and I think opposing it is naive, and it's going to have to happen one way or the other. My major concern is that I think this is an opportunity for the city, because building this bridge, whether it's 12-lane freeway or light rail, it's going to funnel growth into Clark County in Vancouver. And if we're going to continue to subsidize sprawl in Clark County, we could use this as an opportunity in the future to either require them to adopt similar growth management plans or officially join Metro as a county. And I've heard Ethan Seltzer talk about that as a possibility. And it seems to me that if you guys don't force, essentially, for Vancouver, we keep discussing this as if Vancouver is an equal partner as Portland in this project. And I hate to sound superior, but in many ways, they're going to have to submit to the fact that they don't have the equal authority as we do, and it's crucial. I mean, if you're going to try to support this project, you have to pass it. But I think it's really, really important that we control growth, and also with the increased traffic, we're going to suffer the disproportionate share of the costs of maintaining other infrastructure. Lombard, other Interstate Avenue, other streets in North Portland. So when you guys address tolling, are concerned with the fact that Portland is probably going to need a disproportionate amount of the toll revenue to maintain our streets? Thanks.
I will give Royce Pollard your phone number. the mayor of Vancouver, whom we value as a excellent regional partner.
Sam, I think we just set back the cause of regionalism about 25 years. But
they are an equal partner with us. Thanks for your testimony.
My name is Per Fogring. The year is 2015. It's hot and the air is hazy. Maybe it's from power plants burning supposedly clean coal. Maybe it's from forest fires, maybe even from China. Oil is priced at $1,000 a barrel. A meaningless number since dollars no longer count for much. In fact, oil has become one of the new currencies. Other currencies are food, useful skills, booze, and bullets. We have enough alternative energy, land, and water to survive, which is more than many folks have. One of Oregon's problems is how to deal with refugees from Las Vegas and Phoenix. Global trade is gone, and we are left with empty big box stores. Goods are moved by rail and boat. There's talk of building a canal from the Columbia to Puget Sound. But how do we pay all the workers? Perhaps with food and booze and a piece of reclaimed land when the job is done. That's how we pay the workers at the airport project. Their job is to cut up the runways and use the concrete slabs to make garden beds. Downriver, a huge bridge rises into the air. Trains use it along with an occasional truck. On most days, the lanes are empty. But today, two motorcades converge from north and south. The motorcades meet at the highest point on the bridge and outstep the governors of Oregon and Washington. They are here to dedicate the bridge and officially open it to traffic. The governors make speeches about a bright future when this bridge will be jammed with new cars that run on the new energy that we're all waiting for. Meanwhile, this bridge can be used for other neat things. When the ceremony is over, the motorcades turn around and head back where they came from. 1,000 young folks jump on their skateboards and race down the concrete slope. Thank you.
That, of course, is Governor Robert Liberty, right?
Next three are Marion Haynes, Douglas R. Allen, and Rich Brown.
Thank you. I'll take that. Thank you.
They'll be followed by Michael Powell, Walt Evans, and Philip Kelber.
Good afternoon. My name is Marion Haynes, and I represent the Portland Business Alliance. The Portland Business Alliance board endorses a replacement bridge with light rail as the locally preferred alternative. It is our number one transportation priority, given the importance of this corridor to the region and national and international people and goods movement. The Alliance is working with the ports of Portland and Vancouver, Identity, Clark County, and others to create a Columbia River Crossing Coalition. We recognize that this is a first step in a much longer process to bring federal and state dollars into the region to construct this project. The coalition has well over 100 members at this point, businesses and individuals. It's growing very rapidly. Has companies like Providence Hospital, Columbia Sportswear here in this region, as well as Associated Oregon Industries, Association of Washington Businesses, and other statewide groups that realize the importance of this bridge to both the states, not just to this region. I've included a list of supporters that will be passed out to you, and also some case studies that we are doing for businesses in the area about how they are trying to adjust to the congestion on the I-5 bridge and what that means for their businesses. The impacts are dramatic. I want to state that where we are in this process, this is not about building a new big bridge at this point. We're not approving a 12-lane bridge. We recognize that there are lots of questions that still have to be answered. That's completely appropriate. The number of lanes, precisely tolling and when that will occur, all of these things are discussions that still need to go on. That's normal at this stage, but we need to approve the LPA so that we can get to some of those answers. I think it's important to note that if you look through the materials provided by the CRC Task Force and some of the input they got back during the draft environmental impact statement, there is broad-based support for a replacement bridge for this crossing. Three zip codes within the city of Portland is where there is not a majority of support for replacement for this bridge. Three zip codes. We do have a window of opportunity right now. We've spoken to our federal delegation.
Over your time.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, my name is Doug Allen. I think it's fair to say that a greener, smarter replacement bridge is oxymoronic. I would take it from Commissioner Adams that if it weren't for those darn lifts, he might consider looking at a greener, smarter supplemental bridge or some kind of a fix-up to the existing bridge, but it's those lifts that cause the problem. And I think that fixing up the existing bridges is the only way to achieve a greener, smarter, and vastly cheaper alternative, and we need a supplemental draft environmental impact statement that looks at such an alternative. I think Commissioner Adams is probably well aware that, as Commissioner Councilor Robert Liberty said, when the 1958 bridge was built, the original 1917 bridge was raised so that both bridges would not require lifts for regular barge and towboat traffic. They're high enough. The problem is, downstream, the railroad bridge has a swing span in it. Now, we replaced the swing span of the Willamette River Railroad Bridge, but have not done so for the railroad bridge across the Columbia. Now, the Columbia River Towboat Association and Identity Clark County, a business supporter group in Clark County, came together and recommended that the Columbia River Railroad Bridge be fixed, which would eliminate all lifts due to towboats and barge traffic, and would only leave those very few caused by special equipment and a couple of yachts. That was brought to the Coast Guard. All the regional governments approved that. Then it didn't get Coast Guard funding, so it was brought to JPACT in 2004. Now, what happened was this CRC project stiff-armed that, replaced that fix-up project and prevented that from going ahead. But if we would do that, we don't need to replace the bridges. Thank you.
Rich?
Commissioners and Commissioner Fish, let me say it's great to see you up there. My name's Rich Brown. I'm a senior vice president at Bank of America. I'm a member of the Citizen Task Force that has spent 3 years reviewing options for a new Columbia River crossing. And there are several indisputable facts that argue in favor of a new bridge with light rail, bicycle, and pedestrian features. The first is that whether you build a bridge or not, more people with vehicles will continue to move to both sides of the river, over 1 million people in the next 20 years. The worst thing we can do is just accept ever-increasing levels of gridlock. That would be bad for public health, public safety, and our economy. And just throwing up a bridge for light rail, as some people have suggested, won't solve the problem. And I want to expand on that point just a little bit. Much has been discussed about the need to facilitate the movement of freight, and make no mistake, that's a critical issue. But don't forget that Oregon and Portland are small business-based economies. Next time you drive to Vancouver, take a look at how many service vehicles are on the road. There are all kinds of working people, from drywallers and plumbers to interior designers and computer repair specialists whose livelihoods depend upon work in Southwest Washington as well as Oregon. Their need for mobility is not a luxury, it is a matter of necessity. And while light rail serves a critical role for commuters, it does not work for these individuals and businesses that are the foundations of our economy. Second, while this is undoubtedly a very large project, it is a necessary upgrade of an existing highway. We are not building a whole new highway here. This is one small stretch of a system of thousands of miles of road in the Portland-Vancouver region. We're fixing five-mile stretches of interstate all over Oregon and Washington, and we need to fix the most dangerous one. Finally, let's really look to the future. Both traditional and new auto companies are designing right now cars that will make the gasoline combustion engine obsolete. We need to prepare now for the day when cars won't be one of the leading contributors to global warming. Putting this necessary fix off to the next generation is just one more example of forcing our kids and grandkids to pay for our failures to act. I, for one, am tired of doing that.
Next three are Michael Powell, Walt Evans, and Philip Kelbear. They'll be followed by Brian, I believe it's Kappa on North Campbell, Jack Miller, and Jim Labby.
Walt, go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Walt Evans, a lawyer with Schwab, Williamson & Wyatt. I chair the Trade Policy Committee of the Pacific Northwest International Trade Association. As a former member of the Vancouver National Historic Reserve Trust, I also think the river is an artery that unites us rather than a bridge that divides us. I submitted written testimony and a 1905 map of North Portland and Vancouver. Summarize my testimony. I made 2 points. First, Columbia Crossing is needed to remove the choke point in moving freight up and down the coast as well as within our region, freight that includes Washington and Oregon exports. Pacific Northwest has worked for 50 years to expand our trade, primarily with Asia. Today, Oregon and Washington are two of the most trade-dependent states in the country. Trade-related jobs pay more than jobs not tied to trade. I have testified in the past that freight doesn't vote, but the people behind that freight are people making family wage jobs. The cargo needs efficient regional transportation with less congested freight corridors to move goods back and forth across the Columbia and up and down the West Coast. Put bluntly, our region's exports are at risk if our transportation costs continue to soar due to more highway delays in getting exports to market. A second point asks the question, will our generation invest in our children's future the way our grandparents did in our future? In 1917 bridge, my dad was a little kid and was one of the four little kids that pulled the ropes that let the state flags drop down. The generation at that time invested so that our parents and we could have the economic opportunities we've had today. And I asked the committee to consider and approve a Columbia Crossing plan that invests in our children and grandchildren's future so that they can prosper in international trade. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I'm Michael Powell. Pleased to be here today. Thank you, Mr. Fish. Welcome. I've had about 20 years worth of association with the city and city planning and other public service efforts. It's had a very strong transportation bias. My work, Portland Business Association, Oregon Business Association, Transportation Committees, Port of Portland Commission, two terms, and done light rail and streetcar planning, and more recently worked on the congestion plan and the freight mobility plan that Metro chaired and put forward. And I can tell you that having been involved in all those processes, I can only come to one conclusion, which is support for this effort. Everything we consume in this community and almost everything we produce has to move into and out of this community. The lion's share of that, the overwhelming share of that, moves by truck. You might wish it moved by rail or some other vehicle, but it doesn't. And our largest partners probably are Seattle and San Francisco to the south, and trucking is, and probably for the indeterminate future, will be the primary mode of choice. Put it on a personal level, I run a bookstore, and you would think probably I wouldn't have a big stake in this, but we handle about 4.5 million books a year, in and out. Every one of those books came into this town by truck initially, and 3,000 parcels get shipped out every day thanks to our internet and customer service efforts. We rely on prompt and just-in-time inventory